You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In 1997, the World Bank loaned $13 million to the government of Guatemala to finance the privatization of the country's seaport, electrical grid, and telephone and postal services. A Canada Post subsidiary and its offshore partner International Postal Services got the contract to manage the privatization of the postal service. Mike Skinner is a former letter carrier, active for many years in the Canadian Union of Postal Workers. He's currently a PhD candidate at York University. He spent time in Guatemala researching the effects of privatization on postal workers and their unions. Mike Skinner joins me on the line this morning from Toronto. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Jane.
Now, when did you first hear about this contract to privatize the Guatemalan Postal Service?
I was a letter carrier at the time working here in Toronto, and the first I actually heard about it was reading an article in the Globe and Mail in the business section, which was quite a lengthy article with quite a glowing report of how Canada Post was totally managing the Guatemalan post office, and also, you know, quite explicitly explained that they had eliminated all the unions and there was no longer any union representation in the post office, and how wonderful a thing this was that Canada Post had actually done this. Of course, being a postal worker, reading between the lines, I realized for the Guatemalan postal workers, it probably wasn't a very good thing.
How many unions were there representing postal workers at the time of the privatization?
There were three unions active. One large union that represented mostly the internal workers, people who would be sorting mail and doing those, that kind of work. Another union that represented the external workers, mostly the letter carriers and drivers. And there was another much smaller union that represented some of the electrical workers and telegraph operators that worked in the post office.
And who exactly was in charge of the privatization? I mean, I mentioned this subsidiary, International Postal Services. Were there other groups involved too?
Well, it's rather shady and hard to track down, really. Canada Post was sending management staff directly from Canada into the post office. In fact, there were even line supervisors that we knew from Toronto that ended up working in Guatemala for months at a time and came back and kind of bragged about their exploits in Guatemala and not having unions to worry about. So Canada Post was very directly active, but there was also this subsidiary of Canada Post, International Postal Services, that registers in the Bahamas that we don't know who owns this company. We don't know who the chief executive officers are. And this is where the profits actually go to, is this company in the Bahamas.
Union leaders that you spoke with in Guatemala say that Canada Post International employed illegal tactics to try and eliminate their unions, and successfully eliminated their unions. Mm-hmm. What kind of tactics did CIPL use?
It was a very, very systematic union busting program that went on, and I should add too that it happened, you know, throughout Central America, throughout Latin America. It's been happening throughout the world. This same kind of pattern with many corporations like Canada Post doing these kinds of operations. First of all, they started out really nice, you know, a public relations campaign that they were taking over the post office. This was going to be a good thing. They developed a women's committee, a Solidarismo committee for the women, but became a parallel organization to undermine the union. They tried to bribe union officers, and that was effective to get rid of a lot of the union executives. The union executives that didn't take the bribes were then threatened. They were physically assaulted. One case, the son of one of the union officers, the last I heard, was still in medical care because because of an assault. Of course, no direct links, just unsolved assaults. And this is also at a time in Guatemala with all these privatizations going on. There were 17 unsolved murders of union leaders, none within the postal workers' union, but between the electrical workers and the telephone workers and the boards workers, there were 17 murders that have never been solved. The entire workforce were offered buyouts, which was a minimum severance package under the labor code. And which is something else I should mention, too, is there's a good labor code in Guatemala, as there is in many places. It's, you know, we tend to think these are somehow backward countries or something, and they're not. I mean, the laws exist there. People who refused to take the buyouts were then threatened with a team of lawyers who basically told them that if they didn't sign the buyout, they were going to have problems. And then within a period of 18 months, the entire workforce had been terminated. And those who resigned voluntarily, took a buyout, they were eligible to come back for an interview to be rehired again. But a condition of being rehired was they had to sign a contract saying they would never form a union or join a union. And so within 18 months, they were able to entirely eliminate the unions and completely turn over the workforce.
That's really incredible that every single postal worker then in Guatemala was terminated.
Yes, that's right. And I should add, too, those who were rehired, most of them only lasted long enough to actually train a whole new crew of replacement workers, and most of those more experienced workers were then terminated for various reasons. So the entire work floor was cleared out of the original, anyone who had ever had anything to do with the unions.
And who knew, I guess, that working for a union was better than working without a union.
Right.
What were the conditions for the workers like in the new private company? Correos was the name of the name of the new private company. What did workers experience in that company?
I didn't actually interview any present workers, so I can only relate some secondhand information that I've received from Labor Federation leaders in Guatemala who told me that the pay raises that had been promised never materialized, and also that on a number of occasions, Correos has actually defaulted on their payments to the Guatemalan Social Security Service, so that many of the workers, when they've gone to the hospital or, most of them can't retire, but if they've gone to the hospital, they can't actually get hospital care because the company's defaulted on the payments.
What happened to the workers who lost their jobs?
Those were the people that I specifically interviewed, and most of whom were women. I ended up interviewing quite a few of the women who had worked inside. It was very gendered workforce. The women tended to work inside sorting, the men outside delivering the mail. And none of the women that I interviewed were ever able to find any kind of work and pay and benefits comparable to what they had done in the post office. Many people were working as street vendors or in the maquiladoras, doing various kinds of homework, all without any kind of Social Security package of any kind. A lot of women had to take children out of school, even though school is technically free in Guatemala. There's a large number of expenses with uniforms and books and transportation and everything else, as well as often these women needed their children to help them out, particularly if they had a home, some kind of homework they were doing, or if they were doing street vending. They needed the kids to help out to help out with the family income.
Now, you mentioned that, Guatemala has good labor laws on the books.
Mm-hmm.
How is this able to happen if that's the case?
Well, that's a big question. And how has this been able to happen in so many places is the laws exist. You know, the laws exist domestically as, you know, in the case of Guatemala, as a labor code that is there in place. There's international conventions with the International Labor Organization. So all these laws are in place, but they're not enforced.
Has the CUPW, the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, taken this up in any way?
To a certain degree. When a number of us first started hearing about this in 98, there was some connection with the Guatemalan Union at that time, most of which was filtered through the Global Union Federation, UNI. And so there was a real problem with a lack of communications. Of course, there's a language barrier. Not much happened other than a few letters going back and forth and letter protest to Canada Post. The postal workers did partially finance the research trip that I did in 2004, which was really the first time anyone went down and interviewed any of the fired labor union organizers and any of the postal workers.
Have you had any reaction to Canada Post? Because your article about this is available in a number of places on the internet. Have you had any reaction from Canada Post?
No, I haven't received any communications back from then. I wanted to meet with Canada Post when I came back from Guatemala, and didn't get any response whatsoever.
And Canada Post subsidiary is still active down there, I understand.
That's right.
They just signed a new contract?
They renewed the contract in 2004.
Is Canada Post involved in other countries doing, or its subsidiary, I should say, involved in other countries doing the same kind of thing?
Yeah, Canada Post International has 180 projects around the world, many of which are very different than this project. Many of them are putting in new technology and so on. But in Netherlands Antilles, Canada Post has complete management rights over the post office, and a subsidiary owns the post office in the same kind of arrangement as in Guatemala. In Lebanon, and there's a similar situation. And I've heard, again, secondhand rumors that similar union busting occurred in Lebanon, but I haven't been able to do any kind of research to confirm that, as well as in Macedonia. I've had several people contact me from Macedonia saying that there's something similar going on there, as well as Canada Post has been negotiating in a number of other Central American countries, Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador.
Thank you very much for talking to me this morning, Mike, and for going down there and doing that research. It's really quite shocking.
Thanks, Jane.
Mike Skinner is a former letter carrier, active for many years in the Canadian Union of Postal Workers. He's currently a PhD candidate at York University in Ontario. His article on Canada Post was originally published in Briar Patch, and you can find a link to it from our website, cooperadio.org/redeye. You're listening to Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.